Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
$1 million. Welcome back to Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, just about over on the board. SP Futures down 40.75. Dow Futures down around 400. NASDAQ Futures down 92 as we're back on that we're afraid of the new Omicron variant bandwagon. And what bandwagon is Brendan on?
Not Notre Dame.
No. Or Oklahoma.
Hey, Chief, I got a scoop for you. Brian Kelly's leaving Notre Dame.
You know who you should have... I got a tweet from my boys last night. One of the assistant coaches was just leaving a recruiting visit, and he found out about it as he got back in his car. He didn't feel too happy about that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, it's... Did you?
I didn't tell anybody then.
No, I'm furiously trying to get the deal for this Oklahoma guy's thing with USC. And you know what? I think here's a tweet from some dude. Who the hell he knows? $110 million is not confirmed. Best I could do. USC buying both his homes in Norman for $500,000 over asking. So that's $1 million bonus. Buying a $6 million home in L.A. for him. Unlimited use of the private jet 24-7 for family.
Yeah, that's the details I'm seeing, according to a couple of news publications.
That's a pretty good deal.
I think we're we're a tad over the top. If we're going to do this, I think we should be playing players, not him. Just saying.
I agree. The players are the one on the field, and these guys pulling the strings. When you look at the amount of money they're making compared to the players, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's you know, we're part
and maybe
of it
that's why these guys are jumping right now. They see which way the trend is going. That if you start paying the players, you're not going to be able to continue paying the coaches money like this.
So I'm going to say he's the highest paid employee in the entire. Well, USC is a private university. Yeah.
USC is private.
But,
yeah, what do you care what USC pays its employees?
Actually, I don't know that they're private. Well, except they're going to give you some long story about how football makes enough money to pay for all the other stuff. Meanwhile, the kids are paying $70,000 a year to go there.
Right.
I mean, you know, the BS you get from these people is scary. Right? I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, we have, between that, we got, Coach Kelly leaving. We have the market. We made a bounce back yesterday after Friday's debacle. Now it's heading the other way today. What do you make of all this, Brendan?
Uncertainty. The uncertainty and the fact that COVID is still with us. I think there's still going to be a huge number of ups and downs over the next, for the foreseeable future, but for at least the next 6 to 12 months in regards to COVID around the world.
Yeah, I just hope that some of the rumors, actually, what Carl was talking about last week, you know, some of the back channel stuff you're hearing. Again, this is I thought it was kind of just from Carl, where the if you have the vaccine, you actually if you get the COVID after you have the vaccine anyway, that the antibodies you develop aren't as good as if you just got the COVID yourself and survived, which I guess sort of makes sense. But I hope now CNBC or CNN evidently had a big story about the same thing, that there's some interaction.
I didn't see that, but I haven't heard that. But that doesn't seem logical to me. However, we'll see how it all plays out.
Well, I mean, I've only heard it from the front end that if you have if you had it and you've got the antibodies yourself, and at some point, hopefully, you don't do it like the next day. That's really ignorant. If you get the vaccines after that, when you think yours are blinking out a little bit, that all of a sudden you could be stronger than if you had either one. That makes sense. But evidently, if you have the, what do they call them, a crossover case or whatever, if you get the COVID after you've had the vaccines, that the antibodies you form yourself aren't as strong because the vaccine interferes, whatever. I mean, it's a new enough deal, Brendan, that's why a lot of people, and I'm not agreeing with them or anything like that, I'm saying, it's why a lot of people are sort of reluctant to get this vaccine because it's not on the 10-year program like the other ones were. You know, your measles and all the other stuff. So it's not like they have no reason to not get it. I mean, I don't know. I actually think that you should get it and protect yourself. But again, that wouldn't surprise me if they were too quick on this. I mean, but I think what you saw yesterday in the market had a lot to do with the kind of, as the rest of the people, the rest of the schmucks of the world, like you and me, found out as the day wore on, it appears that Powell and Yellen are going to go in front of Congress today and say that they're going to push off the cutting back on the buying of bonds, the taper. They're going to push off the taper because of the COVID. So of course that means, you know, they're pouring more money in the system, and the market went right back up yesterday, about halfway of when it was down Friday. Again, that's a little piece of news you think you would have broadcast to everybody, but that's not the way our world works now. Maybe it never did, but it's...
Well, the other piece of news that hasn't been getting a lot of publicity lately is the debt limit and the debt ceiling. Aren't we supposed to run out of money by the end of this week, or no later than the 15th of December?
There is, in today's world, Brent, there is no such thing as too much debt. There is
but the debt limit is still in effect. The debt limit was extended back in October through, I thought it was December 3rd, which is this Friday. And action needs to be taken to raise the debt limit, or else the whole government could shut down.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. It never does, right? I mean, once in a while it does for a little bit.
Well, it never does, but you don't hear the news about that, or you don't hear what's going on in Congress as far as the Senate getting together to extend the debt limit. Or eradicate it, or get rid of the debt limit.
One of the themes of the show, which didn't start out to be a theme, I won't say every day, but pretty much every couple of days, there's some question, either by me or one of the cherished co-contributors like you, of why some stories seem to percolate and some don't. And now, there have been times when the debt limit has been the only story for a month before the damn thing, right? And now, like you say, this week, I'd forgotten all about it until you mentioned it. You know, you're right. It's this week. I mean, It is amazing.
From what I remember, Yellen said that they could stretch it out to continue making payments till about December the 15th. But at that point, there's a likelihood that the government could shut down. And with all the extra costs now because of COVID, because of the Omicron, will that be moved up from the 15th to something else? But, the debt limit was in place and is in place until comfortably in place until Friday, but after that, who knows what's going to happen.
Well, nobody knew what the thing was till 4 days ago. They still have no idea whether it's going to be worse or not worse than the Delta variant, because there's all kinds of other variants out there. I tried to go through some of them yesterday. But, now all of a sudden they need more money for the government. That's why they got to keep borrowing. These guys, I mean, is there any... I'm going to take another word out of the dictionary that has... Does anybody have any idea the size of they'll use the term credibility gap in these people? And it's astounding to me how you go anywhere, especially in my significant other's lair with her pals, that are all conservative, and they're convinced that the only people that lie in government are the Democrats. And if you listen to the Democrats, the only people that lie are Republicans. I don't. This debt limit. How can these people? Do they think? I think I know the answer to this. It's a rhetorical question. Do they really think we're that stupid, or we don't get the fact that the Republicans spend as much as they feel like, and every time they get to a debt limit problem, the Democrats are on their ass, basically. Now every time the Democrats get the one, the Republicans are on their ass. But do they think that the rest of us don't realize this is like the Gong Show? Who's it? Whatever party's not there. I mean, does anybody think? Is anybody honestly dumb enough? I don't think any of our listeners would be. Is anybody dumb enough to think in this big whatever they want to call it program? All these two programs for that Biden's trying to put through. He put the one first through the infrastructure, whatever that every single Republican senator or representative that has an ounce of brains didn't get his piece. That they refused any of it.
That's the thing. The previous infrastructure bill was touted by Republicans before the November election as they're doing when they were back in their districts, especially those who voted against it and were obstructionist about the passage of the bill. They're touting all the benefits that they brought back to their constituents, which, you know, is a bald-faced lie. Now, you're right that both sides, both the Democrats and the Republicans, lie about what they're doing, which doesn't make for a good governing situation regardless of who's in power.
Well, I'm looking at, you know, I mean, but why, the thing that the thing that astounds me about these guys, well, there are a lot of things that do, is I got to believe back in your day, Brendan, when you made a whistle stop tour and you gave a little speech in Peoria, and your next one was in Moline or someplace, that maybe you had one or two reporters along with you that are actually on the train that will remember what you said one place versus the other. And you could probably say whatever you damn well felt. And nobody ever tied anything, right? Now these guys, everything's taped, everything's on TV, everything's on Twitter, and they still do it.
I know. It is amazing. And you are right, back in my day, because I did get another year yesterday.
Really? Good for you.
I do remember those train stop days and the whistle stop days, and you really had to find a local.
So happy birthday. Was this?
Was
this, I won't say you're...
Chief's birthday was the other day, too.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Are you the same age, or are you older?
Yeah. I think I'm considerably younger than you are.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Maybe...
I mean, look at how much better looking I am, so I have to be younger.
Well, you stopped running marathons, so did I.
Yeah, you guys are both on the same athletic plane now.
Yeah, we both stopped running marathons.
Yeah. Yeah, so I turned 68 yesterday.
I got you by a year, but...
That's what I thought. You were at Marist the year before me.
Yeah. Hey, I got a question for you.
Was your Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday. I was a Thanksgiving baby. I remember my mother's Thanksgiving.
For a while I was, but then they changed the law to make Thanksgiving the fourth Thursday in the month, and I lost out. The closest I can get is the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the latest you can be now is what, the 28th, or as late as you. Yeah, that was a.
But it just extends the Thanksgiving holiday because there's more Thanksgiving for me.
Well, my mom, you didn't want to. In those days, you didn't want to like have a baby on Thanksgiving because let's just say the B team wasn't so hot. She didn't fare too well in Englewood Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They first they nipped an artery.
Yikes.
Yeah, and then to replace the blood she lost, they gave her Rh positive when she's Rh negative. So that was it was a nice scene, though. So, but she made it out of there alive despite their best efforts.
Just good Lord.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's not a good thing. Anywho.
No, it's not.
I'm looking
at... The point is really well made that right now, I mean, we see things live, and it's amazing to me how... politicians can look at an interview and say, well, I didn't say that. Well, here's the tape.
Yeah, here's the tape.
Here's the recording. If I didn't say that, you know, it's like the stories of Charles Barkley when he was misquoted in his autobiography.
Yeah. After he proofread it. I mean, Pete probably never proofread it, though. I'm sure. I bet he never even come close to reading it.
Probably not.
That's what ghostwriters.
He's not a role model, and he's probably not a reader either.
No, that's what our. You know, I was surprised when Eric told me. You know, when you proofread stuff, the only really way to do it right is to read it out loud. I would never have guessed that, not being a writer.
There's some truth to that. I've heard that too, and I've done that a few times. And it does make a difference when you read, but you know, it's hard reading your own material because you read, and even if you're reading it out loud, you read and you say what you think you wrote. And you'll often miss words or not realize things are missing or extra words are put in, like repeating half of a line in the text.
I don't think you've ever... you've written somewhat of a book on running, haven't you?
Yeah.
So you're writing something that's, I'm going to say, nonfiction, right?
Correct.
Because, I mean, it's funny, when Eric tells me when he writes a book, he just writes all kinds of different scenarios for, like, he's like a William Faulkner of, what was the name of the county that he wrote for? Whatever it was, Saga. He wrote about people in the South in essentially a county that was made up by him. Well, because Eric writes about growing up on the South Side, but he says he'll write.
I remember I read a lot of Faulkner, and I'm trying to. It was like a word you could barely pronounce, but it was a made up county.
Well, I can't pronounce
it. In Mississippi.
Well, anyway, he does this, but he writes anything he feels like about somebody or about a person. And it might be 700, 800, 900 pages, and then ties it all together, and maybe he'll use something about that person he met, or maybe he won't when he includes it. He almost like edits it. He does it like he's doing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of that. I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, obviously, because he's won all kinds of literary awards and a brilliant guy and a nice guy. But, I would sort of never even... I give no one to grief like I do everybody. But, by the way, have you figured out the ending yet? And the answer sometimes is no, which is weird.
The sending is true in nonfiction because it's just like a free flow dump. There's a term that writers use, which is it rhymes with Liddy first draft, but it starts with an S instead of an FL, and you just do a dump without really planning out how the organization of it is. You put everything out there, then you go back and you try to cull and remove things and shift things around. But by that first dump, it's just a conscious free flow of what you want to write, and then you can go back and shape it better. Much the same way you're talking about Eric doing. And even though my stuff is nonfiction, it does come to the same point. But oftentimes, it's a completely different article or a different story at the end than it was at the beginning.
Well, he thought he might include, a young black male from the South Side who made it into the securities business. And I don't know if he ended up doing it or not, because I don't think the book's out. The second book isn't out yet. It's getting real close, though. But I mean, he got all kinds of awards on the first one. But I know called me up and say, "Hey, let's go to Tripoli. I need a couple hours of your time." And he took notes. Okay, if somebody enters the business, what do they need to do? How would they meet somebody? Are there tests involved, or this and that? What's their first job like? I mean, he wants to be as accurate as possible, so he probably spent, between me and other people, he probably spent how many hours on a character he wasn't even sure he was going to use yet, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a lot of work. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that they tell you when you're learning how to write articles or books, is that you often have to be willing to throw out your best stuff because it doesn't fit the piece. So you save it for another piece or another article or another book later on, even though you really don't want to, because you think it's a gem of a line or a gem of a character that just doesn't fit the story.
Brendan, I want to ask you, as they say on the South Side. Speaking of which, there was a question of you around. Leo High School, from what I understand, has a big-time benefactor now. That the place is still open. The grammar school is closed, though, right?
The grammar school is closed. By the way, I went to Leo Grammar School. Leo Grammar School and Leo High School. Leo High School is named after Pope Leo, not St. Leo. So even though they're a couple blocks apart, they're different. But yes, St. Leo Grammar School is closed. Leo High School is still open. The president is a guy by the name of Shaka Walls, who grew up in the South Side and is a Leo grad. He was recently on some interviews with First Friday Club talking about what they do. And Dan McGrath, the former sports reporter for the Tribune and the Sun-Times, is the chairman of the board. He's a one of them is the president, the other may be the CEO, but he's in charge of Leo High School too. And I think that they are I don't know if it's the fact that they've got a big benefactor, but they're doing a lot of good work on the south side.
The it's not co-ed though yet, is it?
No, it's not co-ed. They have, I think it's about 300 or 400 boys, but it's still an all-boys school.
They still manage to have a football team and all that stuff?
Yeah, they have a very good track team, and they've got a very good basketball team as well. The football team, you know, they don't really have the number of kids to really participate. I don't think they're in the Catholic League, but I'm pretty sure they still have a football team as well. More prominent in basketball and track than they are in football.
I got a question.
I used to live a couple blocks away from that. I used to live at 78th and Green, and that's at 79th and Sangamon.
They used to play at Eckersall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they, I got my niece had a couple
seconds. And they used to hold practices on the third floor of the school.
God. Well, hey, I have a, we touched on the, you know, and we are going to get into this because a little bit, but we have, how is it, we just talked about stuff that makes it into the press and doesn't. We have all these things going around with inflation and, you know, some monetary theory and those kinds of things. How is it that the monetarist school, which I'm one of, is totally out of, you can't even get a paragraph in an inflation article. And yet, in my opinion, nothing has ever been disproved about the monetarist theory. Matter of fact, it's playing out every day, every place. I mean, it's not like it's a, you will never, yesterday I had a gentleman, was it Brian Cox, CNBC, whatever, I forget his first name, but Cox is late. He writes good articles, but he had four or five guys on there, and every one of them was talking about supply side, and as soon as we get, you know, the workers in the ports working a little harder, all of a sudden all these prices are going to come down and all this stuff. Brennan, I don't see, how is nobody, or is it just that I'm old enough to where there's not any of us left, or what? I mean, I haven't seen an article about inflation in Turkey. I haven't seen an article about inflation in Argentina or Iran. It's like it's almost like Stalin has scraped the world of monetarists and put them in some jail somewhere. I mean, how is it that there's an explanation of, like, what's going on in Iran and how that would be here? I mean, and it is getting to be here. I mean, how do you just, in this day and age of everybody supposed to be able to get all this information about everything, how is it, like you say, that the debt ceiling nobody even knows about, and it's like, you know, this week, you know? I mean, Carl told me something yesterday, and he claims he has an inside source somewhere in government, which he probably does, that in the last couple of months, inflation is running 3% a month, way higher than it ever was in 1978 or 82. And how do these guys keep this thing? I mean, and we have five or six people in the last couple of days that I think are pretty bright guys. And they're not young. It's not like they shouldn't know what happened in the '80s. And they keep talking about if this happens, if the oil prices go back down, if this happens, don't they get it? We have to wait another year and see if it's Brendan, when you're running a money supply at 12.5% a year and your growth is like zero, you're going to get inflation. I mean, I don't care who you are. You could be King Solomon, for God's sake. How does anybody think that it's ever going to stop until the Fed stops what they're doing? I mean, this is basic 101. And yet, when I say stuff like this, people look at me like I got four heads. This is simple. This isn't Milton Friedman's advanced class, because I don't remember that. I mean, but this is simple.
Yep, I understand, and I don't know what the explanation is. I mean, I don't know how you get more publicity for that argument, or at least a forum for that to be discussed as to why that's the likelihood of what's going to happen. It doesn't make sense.
Well, but the thing is, it is happening. It's playing out, right? I mean, we had the 10-year rate get to 1.65 or something like that, 1.66. You've got Biden and Powell and all these people joining hands saying, okay, well, inflation's our biggest thing we're talking about. And from that day forward, because I had a position that didn't work out so hot. Thank God it wasn't very big. And all of a sudden, the bonds have rallied essentially 4 or 5%. We're back down to 1.50. We're going exactly the opposite way, as if those guys, they're pouring more money in the system, not less. I mean, they're telling us one thing and they're doing they think there's no connection, or they can't, there's no way these people can be that dumb. They know exactly what they're doing. And what's the goal, Brennan? I mean, what is it, just giving certain people so much dough that the one percenters are going to be so rich that they'll never look back? They're all going to buy a big boat and leave, or what? I mean, I guess my question is, what is the end game here? Dramatic wealth and 1% of the population, and they all move to Monaco or someplace? I mean, what is it?
I don't know. I can't see the logic in that. It troubles me too, because you're right. I agree with you completely on that point.
Well, I mean, when you do something like that, you must be doing it for a reason. They can't, there's no way they could be thinking that they're helping every man.
Mm-hmm.
I think inflation is the cruelest tax there is. But I have one specific question for you. I'm looking at this usdebtclock.org, which I know we're supposed to look at, so I'm going to blame you. The savings per family, when you first started coming on the show, it was down to $5,000, $6,000, that kind of thing. After they sent out all this PPP money and all the money for people, it shot up for a couple of months to like $45,000 to $50,000 per family. This is an average. This isn't a mean. And now in the last 6 months, it's dropped from that 50 number back down to 21. What do you make of that? That people, like, you know, paid off as much debt as they can, and now we're right back to where we were before they didn't get the checks, or what?
Well, I think that's one explanation. The other explanation is the one that you talked about earlier in the program, and that's inflation, that it's costing more to buy stuff that they need for staples, and they haven't really felt the true impact of it yet, because it comes from savings and not out of their weekly paycheck. But that's a disturbing thing if that's the case.
Well, I don't know how accurate that number is.
The people are spending more than they were at the height of the pandemic. They're a place to go now to spend. Even, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future as far as things like travel or going out to eat or movies or things like that. But when you stayed at home and there was a shortness of supply of things like automobiles or appliances, you didn't have money to save to spend, so you saved it. Now you're able to spend it.
Well, one of my clients, she's a Hall of Fame baseball player, we'll go nameless, invited me out to spring training. Said, "Hey, come on out, I'll introduce you to a few guys," and blah, blah, blah. Brent, all the places I used to stay, which were never right, I stayed in 3-star place, 4-star, I was never a Phoenician kind of guy. I'm going to say that the airfare out and back is half the price of one night's hotel room. These are places I stayed in 40 years ago. They're $550 a night, and they're full. They're not even that nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you've got money now, you've got more than you ever had. And if you're struggling here and you haven't gotten a raise, you're going to have a rough next couple of years. Because I don't think people are getting a 10% raise. Hey, we got a dash, Brennan. Take care of yourself. Are you in Michigan?
I am.
Did you, your people around you all happy about the game last Saturday?
Yes.
I would imagine.
A lot of people were over here. There are a lot of blue flags flying, although surprisingly, there are enclaves with Ohio State around here, and those people were pretty surly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not happy when they lose. Take care of yourself, bud. SP Futures down 36, NASDAQ Futures down 69. Come back with Mr. Joel Ancannon, who was at the game. This will be fun.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Garson jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and low-paced stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Ollie. Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures down 39. Let me get my page up here. Maddie, I've been sitting here. I'm going through the... I get mesmerized by this debt clock, which I should never, but I do. We got S&P futures down 39. S&P futures down 79 as the Omicron virus continues to hit the news. And every time somebody talks from one of these companies or whatever, it's becomes either a positive or a negative. Right now we're on the negative. We got the Dow down 323, the Dow futures. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 197. That's 1.3%. FTSE down 55. Not so much there, only 0.8%. Same thing with the CAC RON, minus 60, only 0.9%. So then that is, well, the markets don't appear as worried. Nikkei down 462, 1.3%. Shanghai, for the second day in a row today, they're like up a point. Yesterday, they were like down a point. So it's they're unchanged. Call them flat. Hang Seng down 376, 1.6. Shanghai has really been different than the other two there for a while. Yesterday we had a bounce back day. The Dow was up 236. S&P up 60. NASDAQ down 291. So the S&Ps were down 120. We came back half of that. And now we've given up two-thirds of that. So we're kind of flying around here. Bonds, down 8/32 on the 10-year yield. So it's 1.44. That's as low as we've seen it in a while. As the Fed evidently has decided to not taper because of the new Omicron. They use every excuse they possibly can to keep pouring money in. The Bund down 2 basis points to minus 0.34. And we've got Japan down 1 to a positive 0.06. We've got oil down 162, 68.33. There's so many people on TV when oil was 84 saying it was going to go to 100. I don't know if they faded themselves or what they did, but boy, what a horrible trade that would have been. Brent down 206 to 71.38. Natural gas down 30 cents. 4.55. There's got to be somebody, Manny, that I can find somewhere that is a natural gas trader and can give us some story on this thing. I've never seen anything like this. Now we were just saying yesterday they were in a range between like 4.85, and now we're 30 cents under my range. So much for my range. RBOB down 4 cents, 2.03. I don't think I'm going to pay $2.40 this week for gas for the suburban. I'm glad I didn't fill it up, Manny. By the way, what was gas in Iowa? Tell me if we're doing this. Gold up 6.30, 17.91. Silver unchanged, 22.79. Copper down a penny, 4.31. We've got Bitcoin down 102 or 58,016. Off the bottom, was down to like 56, but below the high of 63,000 a few weeks ago. So kind of right in the middle there, in their seemingly new range. Manny, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looking good so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We did have an earlier crash on the tri-state I-294 northbound just before 87th Street. That's been clear, but we have some resulting congestion from that. That's our major area of concern. We also have a crash on the outbound Eisenhower just before Des Plaines Avenue, which is exit 21A. That's blocking the left lane, and that's causing stop-and-go traffic as folks navigate around that. But no issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Inbound Eisenhower looking normal. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all quiet. Weather today, a beautiful day for the last day of November. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 50. Right now it is clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 82 today. Right now it's clear and 53. In sports, Bulls blow out the Hornets last night, 133-119. Blackhawks were off. They're not back in action until Thursday night in Washington. Coyotes played, though, and they beat the Jets 1-0. College hoops, Illinois wins by 10 over Notre Dame in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, 82-72. But the bigger Notre Dame news was head football coach Brian Kelly. It was announced that he is leaving the Irish head job for LSU to take over as the LSU head football coach for a reported 10 years north of $100 million as we wait for the contract details to come out. Lastly, Monday Night Football, it was the Washington football team beating up on the Seahawks 17-15. Chief.
The Seahawks, not a good year, eh?
Not a good year.
Joel, you with us, bud?
Hey, good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. All I was thinking about on Saturday was you, sitting in the stands and had to be going crazy. Well, you guys did well. You outplayed them the whole game. It wasn't like it was a fluke or anything.
No, we talked about it, and a couple key things which I discussed with your crowd was, number one, a freshman quarterback, and the research that I've done for Ohio State and or Michigan for that matter, I can't go back to the 40s and when a freshman quarterback has won that game, and along those lines, the defensive pressure, the line of Aiden Hutchinson, definitely going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. And you know what? And we finally came out and we were mean and we were nasty and we were aggressive. So great victory. It's the second time in 18 years, so you can't get too all fat and happy. But it was great. It was a great celebration, you know, with my wife and my daughter and being in the big house. I didn't rush the field. I'm getting a little bit old for that, but, you know, just got to look forward to Iowa on Saturday and, you know, see if we can make the playoffs. But it's a good feeling to beat the Buckeyes, and just been like a huge black cloud has been lifted, finally beating those Buckeyes.
The weight has come off your shoulders, as they used to say in the Southside.
Yes, sir, man. Yeah, I was just looking up at football's Valhalla and thanking Fielding Yost and Bo Schembechler and all the former Michigan players, my dad who started taking me to the game in the late 60s, you know, just a lot of fun. I'm going to keep the tickets and I'll continue to go to games, but, you know, I'm pretty young to have a bucket list. Beating Ohio State at home is definitely one off the bucket list. So,
well, there you go.
I'm happy, you know?
I don't think your coach is going to be hired by Notre Dame. I don't think you have to worry about that.
What about that shakeup? Yeah. Kelly going to Notre? I mean, how much was he making at? How much was he making in Notre Dame?
They don't have anywhere
near $10 million.
They don't have to tell you, but I'm going to say by the time the shoe and the TV and stuff is in there, I would probably have guessed half of that. But I mean,
yeah,
but
wow.
you're living in South Bend. The guy's probably, what was the last thing the guy had to pay for? I mean, $5 million in South Bend. What do you figure that in Chicago, maybe eight,
at least.
I mean.
But he, you know, you can get better players at LSU. There's no doubt about that. That's the recruiting riches in LSU are top of the line, and they get the best recruiting class every year. They've won their last three coaches at LSU have all won a national championship, and he was, you know, getting Notre Dame consistently in the playoff or at least in the playoff conversation. But he could never even compete with the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world. And so I think he feels it's his best chance to win a national championship.
Well, you're not going to compete with Alabama if they friggin' cheat.
Well, that doesn't help.
I mean, when they have, you know, when they consistently, and I think that Alabama this year has been wounded grievously by the transfer portal. That's the reason why they're not as dominant. That's why they almost lost to Auburn. They probably should have lost to Auburn Saturday. I mean, I'll just go back
to what I said about Ohio, you know, with Ohio State, and you have the same analogy there. You've got a freshman quarterback, and I mean, I don't care how talented of a high school player you are, you know, you're making a major step up, and you know, once again, they lost Mac Jones, and they're bringing in a freshman quarterback. So I haven't watched them play that much. I was definitely rooting for them to, you know, to lose to Auburn, but. Yeah, they just got the talent, and they send so many players to the league. It is hard to compete. I don't know how much more expensive Baton Rouge is than South Bend as far as money goes.
No.
But you know, my my son-in-law came up with an interesting rumor, and I'll just share it here for it to go ballistic. You know who the next coach of Notre Dame is going to be?
The guy from Cincinnati. My guys are all over.
How about Urban Cryer?
Oh, God. the guy's quit five jobs for medical reasons, and he bounces back a year later. Was he a cat with nine lives?
I don't know, but he threw that out there. The Chet Harbaugh. Oh, did you see what Harbaugh's doing with his bonus money?
No.
He's donating it to all the people in the athletic department at Michigan that salaries were cut because of COVID-19. Right now it's at $1.5 million. If he wins the national championships, his bonus will accrue up to $3 million. And he's already pledged to donate that money to workers in the athletic department at the University of Michigan.
Good for him. That is good for him. And I was happy to see you guys win. I really was. One of these days I want to go to another game there. I went to one years and years and years ago and really enjoy it. I haven't seen it since they put the extra seats on it. But it's even more terrific.
I got one in Mission that I got up at 4 a.m. nervous for the game, coming up with a game plan. I rushed everybody out of the house. I get up to Ann Arbor. I get to my great parking spot. I open up the tailgate, and I forgot my coat.
Oh, God.
So you went to go buy a Michigan sweatshirt. What's the big deal?
Well, it was, there was a few discussions with the missus on this, because she immediately wanted to go to campus to buy me a coat, and that was going to mess up my tailgating plans. So I knocked on the door of the house that we're parked at. I'm like, hey, you got a coat? And this guy brings me, of all colors, a green and white flannel, you know, those like flannel shirt jackets,
yeah.
A medium. And I'm an extra large. So I do the thing up. Lisa was still not happy. I convinced her, hey, let's go to the tailgate, and, you know, we'll figure it out from there. I'll buy a couple sweatshirts in the stadium.
Why don't you borrow a coat from a fat guy?
Why
don't you borrow a coat from a fat guy?
I was saved. My daughter's brother and sister-in-law live in Ann Arbor. Two streets over from the tailgate that I go to, and they weren't going to the game, so Lisa and Dana went over there. They got me another coat. Once again, it was another medium, and I'm an extra large, so it was a little bit tight. But this is going to go down in history. When I was 9, my dad let me walk into the Michigan-Ohio State game by myself, and I lost my ticket. And I still managed to find my dad after I lost my ticket and got in. And then in the 1987 Rose Bowl, I went up with a group of 8 people, and I left all the tickets in a hotel room in Beverly Hills.
Oh, my God.
And that was quite a fiasco, but I basically begged the Rose Bowl officials to, you know, rewrite the tickets because I had the ticket numbers. And they said, well, we'll let you in, but if people show up with the original tickets, you're going to have to leave.
Well, that makes sense.
Holy mackerel.
That was
of course,
nice.
No one could ever make it from L.A. to Pasadena with the traffic and the time. So that's when we lost to Arizona State, Jake Plummer. So if your listeners are not bored yet, I'll catch you guys next Tuesday. And,
hey, well, hey, what about your thingy coming up?
Oh, man, you guys are so good. Yeah, December 11th, looking forward to that. A week from Saturday, another educational event put on by me and my partners at premarketprep.com and Benzinga. Order execution, tape reading and order execution. How to navigate these HFT markets, go to premarketprep.com. And I'll even give you a code, PMPP10, for 10% off. So hope your listeners that are interested in the markets on a Saturday, we got our full attention, focusing on teaching and educating traders and investors. So thanks a lot for remembering, Chief. You are the man.
Take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures down 44 now. NASDAQ is down 84. Be right back. Kenny Pulcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, more fake Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamari, just met Weber on the board. SP Futures down 44 now, NASDAQ Futures down 84. So we're wobbling with this, despite the fact that the Fed's pouring money in, it appears, this morning as the bonds are running up. Our market's wobbling here. We had a big, obviously, people know, well, unless you're just getting back, we had a big down day on Friday, which is very rare. Probably the biggest down day ever on the day after Thanksgiving. And, we bounced back yesterday fairly strongly. I'm gonna say halfway in some, I think we might have gone further in the NASDAQ. Than Friday, but Dow came back not so much. Now today we're down the other way again. Individual stocks, as you probably can expect, American Express down 261. We've got Goldman Sachs down 671. Home Depot down 327. Not sure where that is, although they've been up so much. Honeywell, I don't have a stock in the Dow that's up here. There isn't every one of them is open. Well, not open. They're trading pre-market. Every single one, every one of them is down. So it's a sea of red. Same thing in the transportation, index, except for JNPR, which is up 21 cents. Everything else there is down. So, not down huge heavy, just we're down even all over the place. And, so the only thing that's up are the bonds. And we got gold up a little bit, but not all that much there. All kinds of news with, Jack Dorsey yesterday leaving, Twitter. He had two companies. The other one is, tell us the name of the other one. Snap is his as well. And, so he decided to get rid of, and he's even going to leave the board at the end of the year, which is sort of interesting. Maybe they don't like the big, huge beard over there at Twitter. I don't know. But you know, he came back there to kind of save the place, and they've done pretty well, buddies. But they still don't really have the ability, it appears, to get advertising money the same as the other places because it's such a short platform. I mean, I think they're doing better than they were in terms of advertising, but still it's not. You know, I don't know. It's a good investment. Kenny, we got Kenny?
You do.
How are you, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. You're going to explain to us what's going on with the market here, but why your buddy Jack quit Twitter. Is it because they don't like beardos or what?
I got to read that story. That was stunning, right? I don't know why he left, other than, you know, he's probably got too much on his plate. He's tired. But one way or the other, you saw what happened with Twitter. It was not a couple 2% or 2.5% yesterday on that news. But we'll see how that unfolds. But in a broader sense, you know, once again, you got this risk-off trade today because now you've got the CEOs of Moderna, who's now a market mover, because suddenly he's contradicting what you know, the news was over the weekend where the doctor from South Africa said it's not anything to be worried about, the conditions are mild, unusual soreness, exhaustion, you know, more of the same. The only ones she's concerned about are the unvaccinated and the elderly. Okay, well, that's the same that anyone's concerned about. So there's nothing new. And then yesterday, you know, Stefan Bancel, I think is how you pronounce his name, comes out and suddenly starts telling everyone, oh, not so fast. You might need two more booster shots. That's good for his business. And as he tells everyone, you know, that they're not going to really know whether or not it's your current vaccination works, doesn't work, which I think is baloney, but that's a whole other conversation.
Well, Kenny,
causing this risk-off trade today, right, and creating panic and hysteria once again, which I think is which I think is, you know, fear-mongering, if you want my opinion.
Kenny, we were having a I'd love some data to, because you're way more into this than I am, being in all these places all over during the day. It's becoming a theme here that we need a, you know, a Kenny hour or something if we can ever get one. And it has to do with the news media, and not necessarily the media, like the people or anything. But it's stunning the stories that make it to the top and don't. I just got real quick, because I said it yesterday, and I just got a thing from my doctor's in one of those doctor groups, and once in a while you get a newsletter from them, and I got a newsletter last week from them. The place happens to be MDVIP, and they're a group. They do some research. God knows what they do, but they essentially sent out, unbeknownst to this thing in South Africa at all, just coincidentally, last week they sent out a newsletter, which they do, and in there was a big list of all the different COVID variants, not all, but a lot of them that have been found so far, and whether they thought they were going to be resistant to the vaccine and better or worse, and what happened to them. And you go down the list. I'm sure it's not all that inclusive, but there's a whole bunch of them. And one of them was called the Eek, because it was an E, and they couldn't pronounce the thing. And it was, they thought this thing was going to be the worst one, and it looked like it was having problems with the vaccine, and even people that had it might be going to get it again. And it was resistant to, what do they call it, the monoclonal, the stuff that they're coming out with.
The Regeneron.
Yeah,
monoclonal treatment.
Yeah, so they're, and then all of a sudden they said, well, there was all kinds of cases in April and July, the thing just flared out by itself, and nobody even knows why. I mean, a lot of these just did something, caused concern, and then just flared out. Now, the Delta virus obviously didn't flare. It kept going. I mean, yesterday I mentioned, I'd love your opinion. Either it's some sort of fear-mongering that it's a short news week, and we just jumped on this one, or they know something that is different about this one, or they don't think this one's going to flare. I mean, I don't know how they could get that knowledge that quickly, because some of these other ones in there, it looked like it was a couple of months, people were all worried about them, and then all of a sudden they were gone. I mean,
it's interesting that you say that, because as far as I know, I only know COVID, Delta, and now this new one. The other ones, if you say there's a list of them, they must have been really under the radar, because I can't really identify any of the ones other than those three that I knew about. And I'm not really sure that this one, the one Omicron, whatever they're calling it, is as dangerous as they say. The headline yesterday was very interesting, that the World Health Organization says that it's highly dangerous. And that's all it said. Like, highly dangerous for what?
Well, the original one's highly dangerous.
I mean, they're creating this hysteria by saying it's highly dangerous. Highly dangerous for what?
Well, right? That's the point. I mean, when you say the original one was highly dangerous, right?
Exactly.
So the question for me would be, well, there's several questions. All right, you and I already had it. Now, is it dangerous and different enough that we're going to get it again? I'm going to vote no on that, because it's still pretty close. Now, is it going to blow through the vaccines more than they already are? Because the vaccines, they're blown through them anyway. Not 100%. You're still better off, I think, with a vaccine. But it's clearly not anywhere near what we were sold, that if you got the vaccine that you weren't going to get it at all, which, by the way, we never should have been sold on, because that never was the case. It makes it a lot better.
I
think we're on the same page here. So the question is it going to replace the Delta variant, kick that one to the curb, and be sort of the same thing, where again, if you've got either the vaccine or the treatments, you're probably not going to die. And if you already had it, you're not going to, if it's in the same spot, I don't know that we need to panic. You?
No, I agree with you. I'm in the camp that I'm not panicking, and I'm also in the camp that it's not going to be what they say it's going to be. Do I think it's going to affect some people? Do I think some people are going to get sick? Yes, but I don't think it's going to be a death sentence, nor do I think it's going to create this hysteria that I think the media today, again, like they did on Friday, is trying to create.
Well, right? I think also, Kenny, and this is the part that I don't know what I would do with this. If you all of a sudden put me in some police power somewhere, which you probably never want to do. I think that people already knew this last Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think that the Fed, the incredible rally in the bonds on Wednesday and Friday, is not something you normally see. The Fed was already going to stop the taper because of this, use this as an excuse. and people already knew about it, and they ran those bonds up. Any normal person, after watching Biden and this guy talk about we're now going to fight inflation last Tuesday, would not have been long bonds. Why would you possibly be long bonds if the unification was when he got reappointed with him, the lady vice chair, and the president are all on the same page. Our new enemy is inflation. I'm not saying everybody in the world should have gone out in short bonds, because half the people don't even know how to do that. But I mean, the idea that you would go out and buy bonds on that day is so far away from what anybody would do. It's like Mars. And yet, right, all of a sudden we see this massive rally 2 days in a row, and I'm going, okay, where's the rat? What does somebody know that other people don't? And all of a sudden we're not going to taper because of this virus. Well, do you think, now, well, again, we got two people thrown off the board because they're front running, I'm on a rant, but there's two kinds of people in this world. Maybe more than that. You and I are driving down the Dan Ryan, and you see, amazingly, a cop might have somebody pulled over. There's some people in this world, and I put you and I in that category, that say, well, the police are out today, I better really be careful. The other people are going to say, they got one guy, that's all they're ever going to get, they made their quota, now I can drive 100 miles an hour. And I think the Fed, right. I mean, you and I might think that because a few people were forced to resign for inside trading, that everybody's going to stop, that's an example. That's not what I've seen of those kind of people. It means now the rule, the gloves are totally off for everybody else, because it's not going to happen again. Now, am I wrong or not?
I agree with you, which is why I think this whole hysteria that they're building is ridiculous to me, and I think that I think it's going to give Jay cover. He's already said it. He's going to go up in front of the Senate today, and his notes released last night already say that he's now concerned about what this variant is going to do to the global economy. If that's true, it's only been out for 3 days as far as we know, so how is he coming to a conclusion that quickly?
Because the modus operandi is that the people who are behind all these people are long the hell out of the market, and they don't want it to go down.
Right. Right.
No matter what it does to the... By the way, one of our other guests claims he has a source, a secret source that claims the last couple of months inflation is running 3% a month. Would you... What if that's true? What does that do to us, Kenny?
Right.
I would have guessed...
It's running at 3% a month.
Yes. I think we're up to 1% a month. Well, that's what the last CPI was. I wouldn't have guessed 3. I mean, my worst fears, I would have said 1.5 or 2. But stuff is just jumping. I mean, there's everywhere.
Yes, jumping everywhere you look, it's jumping. But nobody wants, you know, look, now they're trying to tell us that inflation's good. We have inflation, that's good. That means the economy's strong. That means people are working again. I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me?
Well, it's good if you're Home Depot, if you're ahead of it.
Of course it's good if you're Home Depot. But you're not if you're the consumer, right? If you're you and me, it's not, certainly not good. It's great for those companies that have pricing power, which they do. Most of them do. Certainly the consumer staples do. Even technology has got pricing power, quite honestly.
I'm going to say Microsoft. Microsoft has more than anybody.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to tell them you don't want your office anymore when your whole life's on the damn thing?
Exactly. Thank you. Or exactly, or Amazon, or Google, any of them, right?
Well, I don't want you.
They're all the same. So,
I don't want you to cast any stones at some of your employees. I won't say employers or whatever. You and I don't buy commercials on CNBC. Home Depot does. Just saying.
You and I don't do what?
Buy commercials on these alleged news shows that really aren't news shows.
Right.
I mean, they're going to favor that side. Yeah, that's the beauty of it, Kenny. You and I have talked before. If everybody all of a sudden, every dollar in your pocket was now worth two, and everybody's salary doubled and every price doubled, inflation wouldn't hurt. It'd be like a stock split. It wouldn't do anything, right? That's not what it does. It helps some people and hurts other people.
Right.
Just
saying. I think they're in a quandary. They don't know which way to look, and so they're creating. They're creating diverging conversations to try to confuse everyone where we're at, right? Meanwhile, it's a disaster out there.
Well, it's not a disaster if you got the word and we're long bonds. Your best weekend in 6 months. I just want one of those tips before I go. I just want one tip where I know before everybody else I'll be like the Dukes. Everybody's buying, will then sell. No, the guy in Gomez. Everybody's buying, will then sell. I want that tip just once.
Yeah.
Just say. Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down 40. NASDAQ Futures down 77. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 42, NASDAQ Futures down 81, Dow Futures down more than 400. Like I said, there's no stock in the Dow pre-market that is up. I got one in the transportation. Actually, it's not even in the transportation. It's below the transportation. Juniper Networks, everything in the transportation that's open, is that they're down as well. We've got Juniper Networks up. I got Twitter up a little bit. And we got some of the gold stocks up a little bit. Other than that, pretty much nothing. Kevin, how are you on a Tuesday?
Good morning. Is there any news in the air today?
Just a tad. So let's see. Kevin O'Neill heading to Southern Cal. Southern Cal.
Yeah, my father would roll over in his grave.
So I don't know. Southern Cal buying both his homes in whatever lake you're on for $500,000 over the asking. That's $1 million bonus.
And they're buying your $6 million home in L.A.
Buying you one, yeah. I get now here. Where the hell's Audrey when I need her? What exactly do you get? What kind of shack do you get in L.A. for $6 million?
Three bedroom with a bath and a half.
is he going to get the Clampett house?
That would be fine. That wouldn't be L.A. That'd be moving to Beverly.
That would be, well, that was, that just sold.
Is that L.A.? Is that in L.A.?
Beverly Hills, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a separate.
I'd have to,
I bet it's a separate
truck.
Load up the truck, yeah. But I think that house just sold. It's the highest priced house ever sold in L.A. The one they filmed the Beverly Hillbillies in, yeah.
Got a cement pod and everything.
Oh, yeah. Everything you need. A cement pad. I like that. Unlimited use of the private jet. 24/7. You get a fight with the wife at 2 in the morning? Let's go. We're going to Vegas. I'll meet you at the airport in an hour. Of course, you got to send him a driver, right? There you go.
You know, unlimited use of the private jet is always a nice perk, but it is taxable income. So,
yeah. Well, what about the home?
Unless, of course, you can bundle in a recruiting trip with a the trip to Las Vegas.
Well, you always can do that. So how would you feel being the Irish assistant coach last night who walked out and after a recruiting visit to somebody's house and he heard on the radio and he opened up his car and got a tweet that his boss had just quit?
His boss had just quit, and he was just pitching his program at somebody's house, so he walks out of there feeling like he's an idiot.
There's always something about this, Kelly. It always kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I never could put my finger on it. Now I know what it is. How long has he been negotiating with these guys? Did anybody notice?
Well, that's a good question, and because they let their coach go a few weeks ago. So whether Kelly's been negotiating or other coaches negotiated first, I don't know. We don't have those details, I will give them credit for this. They managed to keep it out of the rumor mill until it was a deal.
Yeah. He doesn't have a buyout. The guy at Oklahoma does there a buyout there? He just got an extension 2 years a while ago. I know
he was under contract at Lincoln Riley, I think, until 2026 or something like that, because he just signed an extension. So I assume that they had to buy that out.
What do? You give the school money, or how does that?
Yeah. There's a.
Yeah, normally you would ask for school to pay your buyout.
Yeah, but there's a buyout training. Normally means. If the school fires him early and owes him $5 million, that's how a buyout usually works, right?
Well, what you're doing is the contract. Every contract has a term, and generally, you'll have it will spell out the terms of separation, and you would have separation for cause, termination for cause, and that generally gets you nothing. But you have also what they would refer to as termination for convenience. And then that spells out who owes who what when you terminate it early. So termination for convenience would be, you're not winning enough. We want to get you out and move on. And sometimes that will mean, say your salary is $5 million, that we only owe you, half of the remaining term but nowadays, for coaching, it looks like they owe you every dime of it.
Okay, but
that's pretty standard in the coaching
program. I know, but you're.
I've done lots of contracts for different kinds of services, and I always work hard to get the best termination for convenience that I can get, the best terms for that, because you want to protect the potentially a future buyer of your company or a better alternative comes along, and you want to have as painless an exit of your current services agreement as you can get.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, but you're coming at it from the wrong end. I mean, you're talking about a coach who gets fired because he's not winning enough.
Right. Well, it cuts both ways, though. It goes both ways.
But I mean. I don't know, actually don't know the answer. Let's put it this way. We hired Matty Weber 10 years to be the football coach at $2 million a year. All right, so that's $20 million. After 4 years, we go, this Matty Weber sucks. He's not winning. So obviously when he leaves, he's probably going to get 8 years times $2 million or something else that's in the contract. But I've never what is the deal when – and usually the alumni will pony up to pay that because they don't want the guy anymore because they want their team winning. But it's always – I'm going to say 99% of the time, that's the direction. You don't normally have the coach saying, I'm out on the other $8 million. They don't usually owe any.
The more typical arrangement with a coach is that the any bonuses accrued would get clawed back.
Well, if Harbaugh quits, you can't get his bonus back for beating Ohio State. He beat him.
Yeah, but there may be some other, upfront money.
Bonuses going in, the salary cap in football. If you give somebody a $30 million bonus, he plays 1 year, you got to get some of that has to count toward the next year or something, right? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Yeah, so you would see that. The other thing is, and I don't know that this is the case, but this goes back to how big a surprise was it at Notre Dame on campus, is you can get into tampering situations. So if he's under contract, the contract may be, and generally the coach's contracts are, They're very specific that anybody who wants to come and call, knock on their door and talk to them about a job has to get permission to do it. And then there may also be terms about how you handle people that that coach has already recruited. In fact, I just did a tort section in a business law course, stepping in for one of the other professors, and you know, I actually used a case of a basketball coach at a lower level school going through that same thing, and he did continue to recruit players even though his agreement said he couldn't, and he did ultimately sign a couple, and they lost the school. Lost the case in court.
Well, I can't imagine them asking the AD a month ago to talk to Kelly and it not getting out.
I would agree. So, that's why I'm just sort of wondering how this all went down. I think there's a story to be told there. I just don't know what it is yet.
I would agree. But this Oklahoma thing, Brennan was saying earlier, it's time that that the students get some of his money. I mean, if it's that valuable to somebody, the guys getting hurt are not getting paid. I mean, they get paid a little bit more than they used to, but still, it's not. This is amazing amounts of money, Kevin. I mean, this is not.
Yeah,
even,
and I think when you see your coach is getting that much, and you're getting tuition, room, and board, you have to be sitting there saying, "What the hell?"
Yeah. Well, he also, I mean, I'd love to have, I don't know if he retired or what, but Lou's friend, what was his name, Matt Riotti, something like that, the accounting for the, I'm just looking at this list here, and of course my inquiring minds want to know, and I guess that's why people listen, is we're always asking these crazy questions. Can you buy somebody, if you buy somebody a $6 million house and give it to them, now, are you going to buy a $6 million house for all coaches going forward, that if this guy, you know, is 0-12 next year and you fire him, that he gets to keep the house, or is this now going to be
set the precedent, haven't you?
Or is it going to be this is boy, I hate to use the term, this is the White House and every coach gets to live there, and if you're not the coach anymore, you got to move. So you're essentially getting the rent for free. Big difference, I think. I mean, I can't imagine giving the guy the home. Would you?
I wouldn't, but, you know, when you see some of the deals, some of the, you know, when just consider how long Notre Dame was paying Charlie Weiss millions.
You
know? Yeah. I mean, he had two other jobs after that.
Well, then when he got fired.
And he was still the highest paid employee on Notre Dame's payroll. So, you know, some of these athletic directors are just idiots when it comes to the deals that they agree to.
Well, wasn't he, where did he go, Kansas State or someplace?
Well, he went to, I think he was the offensive coordinator in Florida for a while.
No, he had a head coach job, right?
And then he went to Kansas. He was the head coach at Kansas.
Well, when they booted him, he was still getting money from Notre Dame, and he also had the same deal there. So between the two things, he was the highest paid coach in the country for a couple of years, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, and see all those people who thought Charlie Weiss was an idiot.
No. Well, I mean, I don't, but I just, I, this is starting to get to the point where he's, I remember, this is why you don't have some schlump from the South Side, meaning me, on a board, Kevin. When we hired, I won't, you know, go into the names or whatever, but everybody knows who I'm talking about. We hired the new CEO, right, at the CBOE, and they start running all this stuff by you, you know. And of course, you've got your compensation committee dude, not committee, but compensation company, you know, that puts this thing together, and they go, well, used to be that you gave people two club memberships, but we're gonna, you know, but now it's starting to be three, so we want to make sure that he has three club memberships. I'm thinking, this hack couldn't play golf, his life's dependent. What does he need? Well, one of them was like the standard club here in Chicago, and the other two are probably country clubs someplace, probably, you know, one in Florida, one, who knows, you know, probably needs the two identical set of clubs at both places. I'm sitting there going, but the kicker was, finally, I lost it. They said, well, we also got to give him $10,000 a year to pay his tax accountant. And I go, all right, my hand shoots up, and I go, wait a minute. We're paying somebody so much dough that we got to pay his accountant to keep track of it all. I got a limit somewhere. They look at me like I was Joe Chump. And it's not like, that's why you don't have people like this worried about a $10,000 expense on, You know, I suppose I should have zeroed in on the big numbers and not that one. But at some point, Kevin, they start rattling the stuff and you go, wait a minute. You know, it's too much. at some point, you get to pay your own tax guy because we're paying you so much. So it's part of the, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'd look at this thing and I'd say, you think at $10 million a year, the guy could afford his own home, one would think. But, you know, it's, you know, what if he doesn't like the place? Does his wife get to pick it out? I mean, what are we doing here? Unlimited use of the jet. Now, what if you find out that the guy used the jet to go to Vegas in the middle of the night for not recruiting or anything? Is that cause for termination? Or do you talk to him or say, what are you doing, you moron? I mean, isn't there some decency someplace here? Just saying.
No, of course not. No, when they say unlimited use of the jet, they don't mean necessarily for recruiting. It can be for personal use. You just have to file the flight plan and get W-2'd for it. That's all.
Do you know how much that costs?
And if that's the compensation the guy negotiates, that's the way it is. So, you know, I'm not going to say, well, then the guy should never do it. The question is, you know, is that an appropriate thing for a school to do?
The late great Steve Fawcett. He went from having no money to a lot of money, but many times I could have three shows over that because every committee I was in, a guy ran into me because I was chairman of, and he always had an issue of some kind or another. But he ended up with a lot of dough, and at least at one point he had a lot of dough before he flew himself into the mountain. But we were out skiing. Dr. Jacobs, we went skiing to a Telluride, and Steve Fawcett had a place out in Telluride. And I just knew the guy to say hello, but we skied with him one day. And, he was very nice. It wasn't like he was an idiot or anything. No, he was very nice to us. And he had these guys flew him out there. Even though he was a private pilot, the insurance company wanted no part of him in the Learjet. You know, they said, this guy's not, we don't want him in our $1 million, at that time, $1 million or $2 million Learjet. So they made him get two private pilots. So when this guy goes someplace, you need two pilots in a jet, right? You know, if you get a really nice prop plane, you know, which most people could get away with, like I could get away with that, not that I go anywhere, but you only need one pilot. But in a jet, you need two. So I see these two guys bouncing around, and they're going to get an iced tea here, and they're wondering. They were essentially on call for 3 or 4 days in Telluride whenever Steve wanted to fly back. And the plane is soaking up, you know, hours of, you know, storage hours or downtime hours at the airport there. These guys, they couldn't have a drink, they couldn't go skiing, and they, you know, they had a room, and they were expected to be ready at any given moment that Steve said, okay, let's go. So, I mean, it's not just the jet. You're talking about two highly skilled people that are, I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and I'm sure he pays them well for that, but still, why, you know, what kind of a person thinks that just because I pay you well means you can be available at my whim at any time whenever I feel.
No, I'm saying this is the deal.
I mean, I think that's, you know, that just tells me what kind of a guy he is.
No, what I'm saying is this if it says unlimited use of a private jet, they're included in there, from a little bit I know, is going to be those two guys and the maintenance on that jet, unless they buy into one of these packages, which by the way are doing really well. If something 5 years ago, Kevin, or 3 years ago before COVID, if we would have invested in these private jet rental places, they're off the chart how well they're doing. So maybe what they're doing is they just contracted with one of those places, so whatever this guy wants to go somewhere, take him. I mean, I hope USC is not employing two pilots just to be at this guy's beck and call. I'm just saying. But anyway, notice how I zeroed in on the part that's probably the most useless, but I guess that's just me.
Well, then, so your real question is he going to turn around USC? I sort of hope so. As much as I loathe Southern California, I do like having a worthy rival, and they have not been for quite some time. And then part two is, what do you suppose? One thing I'm sure is not going to happen at Notre Dame is Urban Meyer.
No matter what
Joel says, I don't expect Joel to be lucid. He is still basking in the glow of victory. So I don't think.
By the way, I did get an Urban Meyer name tossed at me last night from our guys. But I guess the thing, it's one of the things that's bothering me here, Kevin, is I'm looking at this contract. Now, I'm going to say that LSU knew, suspected, they know all about this contract. So I'm going to say this is now the base for essentially stealing somebody from somewhere else. So my guess is that LSU, although they have to be more forthcoming, right, because they're not a private institution, I'm going to say Kelly's getting at least this. So is this now the new base?
Yeah, he's probably doubling at least what he gets.
Right. But
remember, that's the base. That's the base for stealing a guy from another major program.
Well, but it's going to become
a big base for taking a guy away from Oklahoma and a big base for taking a guy away from Notre Dame. What's your base if you're taking Luke Fickle away from Cincinnati?
Well, that's therein lies.
Probably going to be more than Kelly makes, but it's probably not going to be that.
Okay.
What's your base for taking Matt Campbell away from Iowa State? It's probably going to be more like what you're paying Kelly.
All right, so let's cut this down to wheat from the chaff. We're talking $11 million a year. All right, we're giving him $1 million for buying his two shacks for $1 million over what they're worth in Norman. They're not giving the new person that money. They're giving the new person $500,000, and they're giving this guy $500,000 on top of that, right? So okay, that's $1 million bonus, and they're buying a $6 million home, which got to be so what's the rent in a $6 million shack? $250,000 a year. So they're giving him another quarter of a million a year there, right? So now he's up to the bonus plus that, and then he's given a private jet, which has got to be worth $250,000 a year easy. So his salary now is really, it's pushing $12 million a year, and he got the $1 million bonus. Now, the Irish can't be thinking of coming out, and if Kelly gets the same thing, now you're right, they're not going to pay 12, but the base salary now for somebody at a big school pulling all this money is not going to be 5, Kevin. You know, and who knows, plus this guy's probably got shoe, now does he have shoe contracts and all the other crap on top of this to where he's really 15? And are they going to put him on the TV out there and everything like they do Kelly? So if we're talking $15 million for a college coach, what's that? What's the highest paid pro coach, Matty? It can't be that much.
I wouldn't think it's that much.
Certainly not Matt Nagy with the Bears.
If Michigan State's paying $9 million for Mel Tucker, I think that, you know, that market then is pretty damn high. Mel Tucker is, he's done well at Michigan State, but he's still not a proven great coach.
I mean, but is he getting that check? I'm going to guess Kelly, with what the university paid him, and with the shoe contracts, and his piece with, I'm sure he got some of the stuff with, sporting, equipment guy? It's Under Armour, right?
At Notre Dame? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure he's getting some of that, and he's gonna do those ridiculous coaches shows, and he's getting paid for that. So I'm saying he's 5.5 all in at Notre Dame, maybe 6.
By the way, Belichick is the highest paid NFL coach at 12.5.
Right.
Pete Carroll makes 11.
What's Matt Rule making?
Pete Carroll makes 11. John Gruden made 10. Sean Payton, 9.8. Harbaugh, 9. Matt Rule is the 6th highest paid coach at 8.5.
He's where?
So Carolina Panthers. He would be hard to lure away.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean,
Because he's your, you know, 10 or 12 million, and unless he just thinks, this Carolina thing isn't going to go anywhere. Now he's improved. He was 5-11 in the first year, and he's 5-7 this year. So maybe he thinks he's on the right track. I don't know, but he was a darn good coach at Temple and a darn good coach at Baylor.
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, I'm not touting South Bend at all, but sorry, Kevin. But I mean, if you actually want to get yourself hunkered down to a 10 or 12 year career in a real nice place with nice schools for your kids and You could do well in Norman, Oklahoma, South Bend, those kinds of places. I mean, it's not a bad stop.
Yeah, college towns are great, yeah. They're great places to raise a family.
And not to mention, I think you're as a pro coach, 2 losses and people are, you know, I mean, they are a little bit in college too, but I think it's a nicer career. I mean, when we first graduated, made us graduate with our dorm, our chaplain, whatever he was in the dorm, if you knew, you know, if you, I was an RA and stuff. So whenever in the summertime, if I just wanted to go for somewhere for a weekend and play golf, I just get on it. I could just stay in a dorm, and I bring a sleeping bag and we'd bring a couple of buddies, and we, the golf course was $1.25. We played golf for 2 days and go to the bar at night, have dinner, and we just stayed there. I mean, and whenever you go out on the golf course, they talk about the most pressured job in the world. There's Digger. Who's the really nice linebacker coach that just died? He was there forever. Kelly? Was another, the original Kelly.
George Kelly.
Yeah. And, I never played golf, but I'll see those two guys driving around in a cart. I'm sitting there, this is the most stressful job in the world. What do you think a basketball coach does all summer? He plays golf and does whatever. I mean, it's not like they don't do any work, but I mean, the idea that that's, you know, that's.
Well, Tyrone played golf every day, but he didn't do any work.
Yeah, well, it's a, but I mean, being a college coach is a pretty sweet deal. I mean, especially if you got a program that's pretty decent. But hey, you know what? I want to dig in a little bit, Kevin, because
the only problem is you got to put up with the age group.
Well, that's the truth too. I was just after the break. We're almost getting a break, but I want to ask you a little bit about how this transfer portal and how the numbers and these teams kind of comes together. And of course, we want to talk about the new COVID or the new thing and what's doing, because the market's still.
Well, yeah, and I do. Well, I'll give you some scenarios too, some things to consider for who the coaching candidates might be, because it'll be interesting to watch how that shakes out and, you know, how much they botch it.
Well, I'm kind of curious as to when you talk about recruiting, and I've been doing last night, I'm watching the Bulls, and the Bulls were coming back, but I was figuring, you might be on today, and Alabama and the Notre Dame, and then Joel was going to talk about a couple guys from Michigan that get drafted early. And I haven't put pen to paper, Kevin, but maybe you have, of how many people you can have on scholarship, and allegedly, I think Alabama and a couple places cheat and have people hidden places. But if you actually get a lot of the right people, by the time you get like maybe one or two good years out of them, I guess what I'm saying, if people start getting drafted as juniors and you start losing 10 people or so, let's say you actually have 85. How many of them actually pan out anyway? I'm going to say 40 in the best program. Some guys don't grow. Some guys get hurt. Some guys don't like the place. I mean, you get this attrition no matter what, even before these transfer portals got easier. You get this attrition. If you all of a sudden get yourself a team where you have 35, 40 people that are really good, and you all of a sudden lose 10 in the draft, I mean, the ability to replenish at that number, I think that when we were in school, you had 100 guys on scholarship, right? Now it's down to 85. Even though even though you can get drafted as a junior, when in our time you couldn't. So in some ways, it's made it much more difficult for these guys to maintain these programs because guys are just leaving. And some guys, I mean, let's worry about this after break. SP Futures down 44 now. That's the low I've seen. NASDAQ Futures 87. So we're not exactly turning up at least this moment. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Somehow he's Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures down 44. Boy, not only was the Black Friday, what, the 28% down on traffic from last year or something, or the year before, Cyber Monday online sales dropped 1.4% from last year. $10.7 billion falling for the first time ever. I'm not so sure that's so good news. Maybe that's why we're down here a little more. NASDAQ futures down 90. Dow futures down 395. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 146. That's 1%. It was down a little more a while ago. FTSE down 55.8%. CAC around down 70. That's 1.03%. Asia, again, kind of the mixed bag here with Shanghai going the opposite. Nikkei down 462. That's 1.6%. Shanghai up a point, so call that flat. Hang Seng down 376. That's 1.6%. So Nikkei and Hang Seng on the same page. Shanghai, not so much. Yesterday, we were up. The Dow was up 236. S&P up 60. NASDAQ up 291. So NASDAQ is only giving back maybe a third of what they had. NASDAQ had a strong day yesterday. S&P is giving back three-quarters of what they made yesterday. Remember, they were down 120 on Friday, which is a huge day in the S&P. Bonds, here's where the story is, and I'm convinced these guys were, they knew they were going to cut back on this thing. They knew this thing was out last Wednesday. They're already buying bonds, which, you know what, that like really, really sucks. They're down 10 basis points to 1.42. So 10-year was 1.65 maybe 8 days ago. The bond minus 0.02 to negative 0.36. Japan unchanged, well, actually down one basis point to positive 0.06. Oil, get a load of this, down 226. That's 3.25%. That's down to 67.69 from 80-something not that long ago, where it was definitely going to go to 100. And it's down, yeah, it's down 25% 2 weeks. Brent down 253. That's 3.4%, 70.91. Natural gas down 31 cents, 4.54, the cheapest we've seen it in like a really long time. It was $6 like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. RBOB down 3 cents, 204. We got gold up 10 bucks, 17.95. Silver up 3 cents, 22.83. Copper down a penny, 4.31. And we've got Bitcoin down 167, let's say almost flat, 57,952. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and how much was gas in Iowa?
I want to say it was about 290.
Really?
Yeah, 293, something like that. So a little bit cheaper.
Your buggy doesn't use ethanol, does he, 85?
No.
Right.
No. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the Edens northbound side just before Tui, which is exit 39, that's causing stop-and-go traffic. The crash is on the left shoulder, but it's really slowing down traffic if you're heading northbound on the Edens. It's also backing all the way up near to the Kennedy as well. So slow travel times heading northbound on I-94 Edens Expressway due to that crash. Inbound side's looking okay until you approach the Kennedy, as Kennedy has slow travel times in both directions. Eisenhower, we had an earlier crash on the westbound side, that's been cleared. Now there is a crash, it looks like, on the eastbound side, just before North Mill Road. That's causing stop-and-go traffic on the inbound I-290. Stevenson, normal traffic times there, no accidents to report. Same for the Ryan I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Off the expressways, there's traffic signals flashing red at Lake Street and Kedzie in the city. And then in the northern suburbs, there's an accident Palatine Road at Wheeling Road. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, a very nice day here for the last day of November. Lots of sunshine, a high of 50 degrees. Right now it's clear and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 82. Right now it's clear and 54. In sports, the Bulls blew out the Hornets last night, 133-119. Blackhawks were off. Coyotes beat the Jets 1-0. College hoops, Illinois beat Notre Dame 82-72 in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Big Ten leads 2-0 so far at the early start of that series. As we've been talking about on and off throughout the morning, Notre Dame football coach Brian Kelly is leaving his job at Notre Dame to take the LSU position, reportedly making 10 years north of $100 million. That will likely be announced later on today. Lastly, Monday Night Football, it was Washington over Seattle 17-15. Chief.
Kevin, can we take, humor me, and let's take, 3 or 4 minutes just to go through the numbers game on the recruiting. And I'm gonna say that when I was a freshman, sophomore, you could recruit 30 people a year, but your total on scholarship, could only be 100. That ended up getting dropped to 90, and I think it's 85. And I, just as the way the numbers come down, unless you're one of the coaches that, you know, the Bob Devaney and Daryl Royal of the world, they were really pretty good at, they had a huge advantage in the sense that if you didn't grow, let me back up a little bit. I went to, Pete Najarian, was a good friend of, Pete Carroll's, because he was his position coach at Minnesota long ago. Pete Carroll's actually on the Lou Holtz tree. Lou Holtz was the head coach at Minnesota. Pete Carroll was the defensive backs coach. And so we got into the throw around, or whatever you want to call it, the practice in Notre Dame Stadium when the first year Charlie Weiss was there. And it was fascinating. I mean, I'm sitting there BS with Pat Carroll and Pete's buddy, who was the long snapper coach. And anyway, I had a great time. But, I mean, all these guys come in there, and, you know, there's 80 players, and they weren't in pads, but they were in helmets. And so Kevin, you see, you know, at the time I'm 6'4", I'm a pretty big guy, and you see all of a sudden these 7 or 8 guys walk by, and they're like pretty huge. I mean, a couple of Samoan dudes and a couple of, okay, that's the offensive line. Then you see another 5 or 6 guy come by that might be taller than me. All right, those two guys are defensive ends. I mean, it's pretty easy to kind of pick them out. Then you had your quarterbacks, then you had a bunch of guys that were really fast playing receiver, and they're catching long passes. Then you had probably another 25, 30 guys, and not disparaging anybody, they're your 6'2", you know, 210, essentially white guys that didn't really grow after high school. They're still good football players. They're out doing all these plays. They're fast. You can see they were all stars someplace, but they're really not about to break into the upper crust of Southern Cal unless, you know, a bus gets lost or something. So you've got, that's what you sort of contend with in college. So now, but in those days, Kevin, you had 100 people under scholarship, and you couldn't draft juniors, right? So you had some kind of a hold on your, quote, talent, and nobody ever transferred, I mean, that I know of. Maybe one or two people did, but I don't see how you can, unless you, now the Notre Dames of the world, the Stanfords, the Northwestern, a lot of the Big Ten schools are pretty good about not making people quit. I mean, I heard stories from some guy from Nebraska where you'd go out there, and if you didn't do 1,000 push-ups or whatever, they just made it so miserable for you if they didn't really want you that you would quit. And if you quit, they got to bring in another guy the next year. That's why those coaches had their, quote, advantage. But I don't see how, in this day and age, where I think you only have 85 guys on scholarship, Kevin, how can you keep, and your guys are good enough where you're losing 9-10 people a year like Ohio State and Alabama do, unless you found some way to, quote, cheat, pack them somewhere else or get other people to leave. Is there any limit now to how many people you can bring in any given year if you lost? Say you got drafted 20 guys. You get to bring in like 40 people?
Well, the maximum recruiting class is 25.
So you maybe could never catch up.
That's been around for a long time, but I do remember, you know, back in the 70s, like Johnny Majors at Pitt recruited something like, you know, 40 guys when he got there, and when they were all seniors, and that was like Dorsett and Hugh Green and, you know, some of those kinds of players. You know, those might have been Bill Frelick, too. I can't remember if it was Frelick. I don't think Covert was there yet. But that group won a national championship because they all grew up together and they had overwhelming numbers. And then they fell off, of course, as all those guys used up their eligibility. You have to bring in, you know, if you're going to be Ohio State, if you're going to be, you know, Clemson, Alabama, anybody, you have to bring in great classes every year. And guys that, you know, guys that know they're not going to play as freshmen, but they're going to get on the field as sophomores. And you know, they may get on the field some as freshmen too, but the point is that, you know, not everybody leaves after 1 year of sitting on the bench. So, you know, occasionally you'll get some people who decide they don't fit at the program, they don't like the coach's style, they don't like, you know, whatever. Maybe they get 2 years in and say, you know, I don't see a path for myself because the guy in front of me is not going to, you know, is going to be there for a while. So you get those kinds of situations. You know, it's, I don't know how Notre Dame has managed to recruit good tight ends in their most recent classes, because they have a pro caliber tight end who's still only a sophomore and has to be around another year. But they've managed to do it. And that's what you have to do. You have to keep, you know, marching guys into the program. There will be a certain amount of tradition. There will be a certain amount of attrition. And some of them, you know, some people will get hurt. Some people will get, you know, will decide to leave you. Some people won't pan out. But if you bring in 22 in every class and half of them are really good, then you've got the makings of a, you know, great roster every single year.
But how does
Natachi writes in, are ballooning college coach salaries inflationary? Is the Notre Dame football program like the Weimar?
It is actually responsible for all the inflation in the country, and I'm waiting for Joe Biden to actually say that, or Jen Psaki to actually say that this week.
Well, wait a minute. I thought you were going to say
all on NCAA coaches' salaries.
Wait a minute. Now I thought you were going to come up with something about it as a supply chain disruption. We can't get enough coaches.
Well, that could be it too. But when you say you can't get enough coaches, Tom, you know, let me run by a few candidates. First of all, on their own staff, they have Marcus Freeman. Now, Marcus Freeman is probably, you know, he'd be a huge risk because he's 35 years old. He would be a first-time head coach. And a first-time head coach's prospects at a major program, for the prospects for success, I think the hit rate is pretty low on that.
Well, they have the Bob Davie.
That doesn't mean there aren't some who succeed. There certainly are. Lincoln Riley was a first-time head coach at Oklahoma as an example. So they certainly happen. And Freeman was, he's been the defensive coordinator for a year. He has made a huge difference in recruiting. They are bringing in all these, we'll see how many, reopen their recruitment now, but Freeman, has recruited on the defensive side a whole slew of really, really highly rated, you know, defensive linemen and linebackers.
Now, can all those guys bail now because Kelly's leaving?
Sure they can, yeah, because it's only a commitment. They haven't signed anything.
All right, okay.
So Freeman, though, but he's charismatic. He's a good coach. Notre Dame outbid a year ago, outbid LSU for him. LSU tried to hire him as the defensive coordinator under Ogeron. So Freeman's an interesting candidate. Now, they got Freeman from Cincinnati staff, so I would imagine that if they were to make a run at Luke Fickle, and if they were able to get him from Cincinnati, that he might want to keep Freeman around if he can and do whatever it takes until Freeman, you know, finds just the right job, because he can be particular about the job that he takes. He's really building a big reputation. So that might be an option. But, you know, I mentioned Matt Rhule before. I think, you know, his salary and where he is at his time at Carolina in the NFL is probably says this is a guy who really want to give this a good shot and see if he can succeed there. So I'm not thinking that. I'm also thinking that Matt Campbell at Iowa State would be an interesting candidate. He's done well at Iowa State and certainly would have a lot more resources available at Notre Dame. If he comes on board, I don't know that Freeman would be sticking around. And so, again, I don't know what that would do to the recruiting class, so there's that dynamic. I would imagine that, like many other places, that Fickle would be their dream, you know, to actually pry that guy away from Cincinnati. He's an Ohio guy. He's been the head coach for a few years at Cincinnati. His record is, let me see, he's 47-14 at Cincinnati, 29-9 in the conference. His first year was 4-8, and then 11-2, 11-3, 9-1, 12-0. So, you know, he's obviously got a nice thing. But the other thing that he has going for him is he spent, 14, 15 years at Ohio State. So he has been swimming in the big pond before when it comes to recruiting. So, you know, so I think that would be their dream, and then if they could hang on to Freeman in the process, that, you know, everybody would be dancing. All Notre Dame fans would be thinking that's just great.
Well, then
he's
that's
a Midwestern guy. I think he turned down overtures from some of the other schools that have been open. And part of that is, you know, you always have the dynamic that when you're young enough and you have a family, you know, where do you want to move your family? How much do you want to move your family? So, you know, to Midwest, I don't know if it'll appeal to them or not.
Well, $10 million.
Kelly's part, I'm sure at LSU, one of the things that makes the job attractive is that Nick Saban is 70 years old. So
yeah.
Well, so, I mean, you know, he's not going to coach there forever. And so if you know, from Kelly's standpoint, is he going to be able to do that? Now, some of the LSU fans are, you know, their comments about Kelly is he won't fit in there. He's, you know, an East Coast type of guy. Won't fit in culturally. Yeah, I wouldn't. That's kind of true. Gets out coached in big games. Yeah, he's got a real history of that. And he throws players under the bus. And has he ever recruited successfully in Texas? And those are all their concerns. But if he gets his program in good shape, he'll be ready to move up if Alabama, you know, doesn't do as well when Saban leaves. Which there's no guarantee that they will. They, you know, they went through several coaches before Saban.
We haven't talked about that. Manny, what do you? I think Kelly's an odd pick for LSU. To be honest with you,
For all the cultural concerns that Kevin mentioned, I think that those are the reasons. I think X's and O's wise and recruiting wise, he'll do fine. In fact, I think you can get better players at LSU consistently than maybe anywhere else in the country outside of Alabama, probably. But the cultural clashes, I mean, he pissed a lot of people off at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And he's an East Coast Irish
still
guy.
Still does.
Right. Like, at LSU, that sort of attitude and demeanor could rub a lot of people the wrong way. I don't know.
I sort of have this, you know, these very mixed feelings about him. Because in many times I think he means well and he just doesn't have the personality to pull it off. And he does have his name up on a wing, the cancer wing at the St. Joseph Regional Medical Center over here, and that's because he sunk a lot of money into that place. So, you know, that there's a community contribution, and I think, you know, I think that was that's rather significant. So, you know, I don't want to hate the guy too much. I don't want to hate on the guy too much. But by the same token, the same things Matt just mentioned are all the kinds of things that I haven't liked about him. Plus, he has the most baffling play calling sometimes.
How does a school? I remember this is a little while back where I was looking Beldo. Of course, my buddy Dick Belden got me involved in these defensive line players. So he showed me his website. And there was a time when there were only five or six 5-star defensive linemen in the country, and I think 3 or 4 of them went to either Florida or Florida State. That's how high up the pecking order those guys were not very long ago. And now neither team is even mentioned anywhere, any place.
Both teams were.
Well, yeah, Florida and Florida State played last week, and Florida State, I believe, was trying. I don't even remember who won the game. Whoever won the game was already not going to be bowl eligible by virtue of going 6-6. And whoever won the game knocked the other team out of the bowl picture by knocking them down to 5-7. So, you know, did you ever imagine that game would have so little relevance in the college football world?
Yeah, Manny, what happened there? I mean,
they both coaches have been fired. And they haven't found the right guy in several years. And yeah, to see a Florida State game on Saturday when both teams were below 500 going into the game was just something you would never imagine seeing.
In fact,
Miami's not very good either. I mean, the fact that those, you can't find coaches at those three schools is mind boggling.
Has there been a diminution of high school football countrywide?
No.
There has been.
I mean, there probably has been, but not in Florida. And it's that's why these coaches are making so much money, because you don't want to become a graveyard situation like the state of Florida is right now, or the state of Texas has been, where they haven't been able to find a guy at Texas of all places.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that
is there any place that has better infrastructure for its football program than Texas? And I would say no.
Maybe Ohio.
And by infrastructure, I mean facilities, willingness to pay coaches, a lot of talent available. And the university really wants to win, and they'll do what it takes. And I think it's really hard to find good football coaches. Same thing in the NFL. How many football coaches are met with great enthusiasm? They're the hot coach of the year, and get hired and just fall on their face.
Well, you lose. I'm saying depth is an issue.
I don't think coaches are good at the leadership part. That's sort of my hypothesis. Most of them know how to, they know the technical aspects of it, and that's what made them good position coaches. But I think they often just totally suck at being great leaders.
I think every time you add another game to the year, what percentage of even NFL coaches, college coaches for that matter, show up with their whole gang in any given week? I mean,
but that's even for everyone.
I get what I'm saying, but you get this mediocrity. I mean, Oregon should not have gotten their ass absolutely kicked by Utah. If you looked at the beginning of the year ratings, that game should have been 30 points the other way. And yet,
well, except that the beginning of the year ratings are really stupid.
Okay, but what I'm saying is Oregon must have lost some people. Utah must have been better. I mean, you look at what's going on with the
playoffs.
We'll
find out a little more this week, won't we, because they get a rematch.
Well, but now we have this week, we're going into the playoff season. Other than Georgia, I don't know, maybe Alabama, because you think they have all this personnel, but it didn't look like it against Auburn. I don't know that these teams, it's almost like, is it parity or is it mediocrity? I don't know. I mean, do any of these teams have as much depth as they did 10 years ago? I don't think Ohio State does.
But Ohio State a year ago had as much depth as they had 10 years
ago. Well, I'm saying,
Ohio State starting a freshman quarterback, I mean, it ebbs and flows. It's college. Guys leave early. You have injuries. And so you're going to have, when you have half of your roster turning over every year like Ohio State does, it's impossible to always win 12 games. I mean, it just is. The fact that they're still 10-2 is actually impressive with a true freshman quarterback and the amount of talent that they replaced from last year. LSU had more talent than I've ever seen on a football team in 2019, and all you got to do is watch an NFL Sunday to see their players everywhere on every roster. And Ed Orgeron won the national championship, and then all those guys left, and they haven't been the same.
Well, then they lost like 17 people.
Yeah, but it ebbs and flows. It always has. I don't understand where you're coming from. This is how it goes.
Well, there's only a handful of programs that actually can reload every single year.
Where I'm coming from is I'm having trouble articulating as usual. I guess what I'm saying is, let's say Florida State, Florida. 10 great new coaches all of a sudden landed someplace. Are there enough players around where all those teams could all of a sudden suddenly be good without the other guys being worse?
If you took one of the great coaches in the country and put him at Florida State, they would be a powerhouse within 2 years.
Right, but what I'm saying,
you just got to have a coach.
My question is, would it be accretive or would everybody else lose a little?
I mean,
well, I know how we can answer that, and I'd have to do a little research to do it. But how was their recruiting class ranked? What kind of talent did those schools bring to their campuses? And if it, I tend to think it was pretty good that they didn't suddenly go fishing in the 3-star pond for their primary source of talent. I really suspect that it's been poorly run programs.
I also think there's something to be said for not always firing your coach after 3 years.
I would agree.
Where I think Michigan made the right choice in sticking with Harbaugh, and I know that he's had some ups and downs. By their standard, they thought he was going to be a savior, but it's not like they're below 500. I mean, he still has won 10 games or more, 5 or 6 times or whatever it is. And, he had a COVID year last year that was a disaster, and he had a couple of other bad years, it's hard to find a good coach. And I look at Iowa, they've stuck with Ferentz for 20 some odd years now, And they're 10-2 this year, and they've had some bad years, but they usually bounce back. And some of these schools, they panic and they fire a coach in 3 years, and so then you got to give the next guy 3 years, and then if he doesn't work out, you fire him again, and now you're near approaching a decade, and you haven't had any sustainability.
Let me try my question one more time. This time I'll try and do it better, because I know you guys know the answer. If I could just get the question out, let's take a four school pool. Let's say Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Pittsburgh. They all are all over the states of Ohio and Michigan, or Michigan and Pennsylvania, kind of the cradle of football, and they're going to get guys from other places. So let's get a really good coach in Michigan. All of a sudden, for the next 10 years, he does better sucking out of that pool than the other guys, so Michigan is more... My question is the pool getting greater or less of good high school players to come from? I mean, I don't know the answer. I mean, on one hand, anecdotally, you hear more people playing soccer. I mean, the point is at the end of the day, can all four of those schools be good? Are there enough people in there compared to 10 or 20 years ago? Is it less or more, I guess, is my question.
Well, so here's your, I, the answer is, for me, is I don't know. That's going to take a little bit of research. But the question is, who is siphoning off that talent? Is it just those schools, or is it other programs as well? From Penn State, is Maryland siphoning off because Penn State's not good? Is Maryland able to get two or three more really good players? It's not enough to make Maryland a powerhouse, but they're siphoning that away from Penn State.
Well, simple question, I guess, and we'll talk about it, is, are there 120 guys that are all fighting over where there used to be 100 or used to be 140, I guess is my question. I guess we don't know the answer to that. I mean, can there be 25 really good college football teams? I mean, there can only be a certain amount of good pro teams.
Well, the way to check that out is go through the top 200 recruits and kind of chart out where they went and say, is there a trend there? Are they more dispersed? Are they less dispersed? You know, what's going on there? And that would be how I would pursue it.
All right. Well, interesting stuff, guys. Matty, glad to have you back. One question: when you pull in with your Illinois plates in your 1%er car to Gus's Wheels in Iowa, what was the look you got?
The looks were fine.
Fine, they liked it. Did you tell me you were an Iowa guy?
I didn't get into the weeds on anything, but I was just very happy to find someone that could weld a cracked wheel on short notice, because I went to like 8 places and it took the 9th place to actually get some service.
So you didn't have to come up with, I'm from Iowa, I married a nice Iowa girl, and we're going to the Iowa game next week. You didn't have to say that?
No.
There you go. Well, I'm glad to have you back. SPV is down 28. Now we've rallied back some here quite a bit in the last few minutes. NASDAQ futures only down 38 now. They were just down 90. So again, we're rallying pretty good here. Be right back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.